Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to be talking about the kingdom of God, and we'll be talking about His righteousness and how the whole system works. Now, that's an extensive concept of how the whole system works, the system of God, the kingdom of God. How does that work? Because that's not just here where you're at. That's in those parallel dimensions that we call heaven and hell that are right here, right now, another place, but here also at the same time. And if you were to pull back a veil, you could see what is going on in heaven and hell that is affecting this world. What we do in this world really doesn't affect heaven or hell. But it affects our relationship to those two places, whatever they are, and it draws us near them. We just did 2 hours this morning talking about how, you know, people think they're making choices and decisions, and people, a lot of people want to be at liberty, want to be free, want to be separating themselves from the bondage of the world, and they don't understand that the bondage of the world is the result. It is the symptom of a spiritual bondage that precedes it. And if you were to go and look at the biblical text in reference to what they call the bondage of Egypt, refers to a predicament of the ancient Israel where the value of a portion of their labor belonged to the government of Pharaoh. They actually were in bondage. They actually owed the Pharaoh. Why did they owe the Pharaoh? Well, he gave them benefits. He gave them free bread when they were out of money and out of resources. And, you know, they'd sold all their sheep and, there was a famine. And they needed help from somebody. And the only one who was there who could help them was the government of Egypt. And the government of Egypt was able to do this because Joseph was there. And Joseph saw what was coming and told the Pharaoh. He would have told his brothers what was coming and they could have prepared, but no, he wasn't with his brothers. His brothers had cast him away due to envy. And what is envy? That's considered a vice. Well, what is the virtue? You know, vices, that's one of the things we talked about, vices and evil. Evil is the absence of good. What you see as evil is the result of the fact that good is not present. What do they say? In order for evil to prosper or prevail, it is only required that good men do zero, nada, nothing. They don't do anything and bad things happen. So who does those bad things? Well, people who already have let evil into them because of the fact that they have not let good into them. Darkness comes when the light is blocked. The evil that we do is part of what the psychologists call the shadow self, the part that you don't want to see. And since Adam and Eve left Eden, that was all about what they did not want to see. And so I'm going to tell you what you may or may not want to see. And you're going to have to make a choice as to whether to see it or not. And that's the only choice you're really going to make. If you will not see the truth, you will fall subject to the lie and the adversaries of the truth. You will become subject. You'll pick friends that you think will be helping you out, but they won't be. They will be planning on devouring you, using you up, and casting you away. And if you look into their lives, you'll say, well, where's this man's wife? Where's this man's, or this woman's husband? You know, I've always been astounded at the number of women who want a man by stealing him from another woman. It's a kind of competitive thing, but the reality is if If you can steal the man, is he really worth having? He certainly is lacking honor, chastity. He's not even a very good friend to his wife. He cheats on her with you. Why do you want him? Why is he such a catch? I mean, it's not only damaged goods, you damaged it. You're going to end up resenting him. You know, what is that all about? Of course, now, you only steal men whose wives don't understand them. Yeah, right. But anyway, the bondage of Egypt. Let's go there, because that's where you're at today. In the bondage of Egypt, 20% of the labor of the people belonged to the government. So they had to work 1/5 of their laboring year was working for the government, which allowed the government to create all kinds of aqueducts and irrigation systems by, you know, damming up different parts of the Nile so that when the floods came, they could divert the water out onto the fields and grow vast amount of crops and a lot of other work projects that they were able to put into motion because people owed them 20% of their labor. Now, of course, many of the things they built had a purpose and a value to society, made the Pharaoh richer than he was already and more powerful than he was already. But it also improved the lives of a lot of the people in Egypt. It was a very successful society. But eventually, with so much power concentrated in the government, came corruption. Moses comes along, and he sees that corruption and the abuse of that power, and he tries to exercise authority over him, which he actually does. It wasn't quite like the movie. He was the son of the daughter of Pharaoh. The reason he left Egypt was actually, if you go into the original Hebrew and in the Philos, the reason and you understand the process of what's, the reason he left Egypt was that he was becoming the tyrant. He was becoming the monster. Power was eating him up, as we saw it eat up Saul when they gave him power. And eats up so many people when they get power. They are corrupted by power. And so liberty is power. If you have people that are in bondage and you give them liberty, are you going to corrupt them with the liberty that you give them? Will they be corrupted with it, or are they already corrupted, which is why they're in bondage? You know, I always wondered when I was reading the biblical text and looking at, you know, like Exodus 4:21, and the Lord said unto Moses, when thou goest to return into Egypt, see that thou do all those wonders before Pharaoh, which I have put in thine hand. But I will harden his heart, the Pharaoh's heart, that he shall not let the people go. Why? Why would he harden the heart of the Pharaoh so that they would not let the people go? What is the point of that? I mean, we can look at this in so many different ways, but why would he do that? And thou shalt say unto the Pharaoh, thus saith the Lord of Israel, is my son, even my firstborn, and I say unto thee, let my son go, and he may serve me, and if thou refuse to let him go, behold, I will slay thy son, even thy firstborn. So this is a heads up to Pharaoh that this is what's going to happen. And it came to pass, by the way, in the end, that the Lord met him and sought to kill him. And actually, I think that's not a correct translation, but I could talk about that later. But the point is that Pharaoh was given a heads up as to what, and yet his heart was hardened and he would not let the people go. And so why? And they talk a little bit about it later on in Exodus 7:3. Which is quite, you know, that's several chapters later. They tell you what was going on and why he said this. but you may not understand it without some further explanation. And it says, and I will harden Pharaoh's heart and multiply my signs and my wonders in the land of Egypt. So what does he mean, his signs and wonders? What is that word, signs and wonders? Well, if you look at the Hebrew word there, it's oath. And I personally think it's connected to the same word that we have today, which is oath. But it is translated signs most of the time, occasionally token, a couple of times miracle, also mark. And it's defined as a sign, a signal, a distinguishing mark, something that marks somebody in a way that is distinguished. Well, it's actually composed of several letters. I mean, the basic word is composed of Aleph, Vav, Tav. Aleph has to do with the relationship of man and God, the two yods divided by a Vav. And the Tav is the word or letter for faith. So is this to multiply his relationship with the people and their faith in him? And actually, that's really more about what the word means. But all the words in Hebrew can mean several things, but that's, if you look at the meaning of the letters, that's what it comes out to. But the other word he says he was multiplying my wonders. So what is this multiplying my wonders? What is that word wonders? Well, it's Mopheth, which is starts with a mem. Mem is the letter for flow. It also has a vav in it and another letter. But basically, the last letter is tav. So it's the flow of faith. And that's what he's talking about, is the character of his faith, the mark of his faith, will be increased, and the flow of that faith will be increased. So he hardened the heart of the Pharaoh so they would stay there, and then he performed these miracles. And so we're supposed to believe that the people believed in God because of the miracles. That's the common interpretation. Because they saw God do all these fantastic things. And really, almost all those things that were done are natural occurrences. And even the last one is actually a possible natural occurrence. But how it was all arranged in such a timely fashion, that's a miracle. Or what we would call a miracle. But what is the real thing that is being increased here? And what is really increasing it? Is it the horrible things, the plagues and all that? Or is it what the people had to do to overcome the plagues? If you read Philos, he's expressing the idea. I mean, they're filling it, and we see this even in the Bible, filling each other's water vases. Filling it with what? What vases? Why are they filling this? Well, you know, the water is undrinkable. Because of this red tinge that appeared in all the water, they couldn't drink it. If you drank it, you would get sick. But they were able to fill each other's water vases and not get sick and drink this water. What would they do? Well, actually, they still do that in that area of the world. And they make clay water filters, much like a Berkey water filter. Different design, but same principle. And they're filtering the water through these clay vases into other vases that are fired and absorb that water. But all the impurities are taken out by filtering it through. And we can show you how to make those things. And someday you might need to know how to make those things. But the point is they had to do this and work together in order to make sure everybody had enough water. Because if you didn't have enough water, you're going to die. You had to have water for you. You had to have water for your livestock. So their livestock stayed healthier. Everybody else's was suffering. Then came other things, frogs and flies and all these things. But they knew what was coming and there was ways to prepare. But they had to work together to prepare. And so there was some faith generated out of the fact that Moses was telling them, heads up, this is what's going to happen. This is how to deal with it. But the real bonds were created because they had to deal with it together. And they did not just help one another, they also helped the other Egyptians. They showed them what was happening, and they filled their water vases, and they helped them out. And this is why thousands of Egyptians left with the Israelites, and why thousands of other Israelites were given gifts, gold and silver and all kinds of gifts, when they were leaving. Why are they giving them gifts? Because they had blessed them with their own service. Now, just today, I had somebody visit me who'd been taking FEMA courses. He has to in his line of job. And in taking those FEMA courses, he said, you know, your people ought to take those courses too, to understand. Most of the first courses he's taken has to do with incident command systems. And he's right. It would be, you could do it online. You don't have to go anywhere. There are 3-hour courses. You go through the course and you can actually get certified. I don't care if you get certified. But understanding what the rest of the world is doing in the time of emergency, some of the things that they have learned and how to take care of one another in the time of emergency, that would be good for all of our ministers to learn, or at least some of them learn, and then maybe they can shorten those 3-hour courses down into a shorter, more efficient course, and share that with the other ministers. And then they can share it with the people so that you learn how to take care of one another. Because during the plagues, that's what they were learning. And it wasn't just a matter of learning the knowledge or the information. They were also creating bonds because they were actually helping each other in hard times. And those bonds were going to be very important when they got out to the desert, because there was going to be a lot of hard times out in the desert. And then we talked a little bit this morning about what it meant to worship the Lord. You know, because that's what, the, you know, that he it says in verse 7:13, let's look at verse 7:4. But the Pharaoh shall not hearken unto you, and I will lay my hand upon Egypt and bring forth my armies and my people and the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt by a great judgment. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch forth my hand upon Egypt and bring out the children of Israel from among you. Now, that's an important principle, is that God brought the Israelites out of Egypt in one mass deal. Moses wasn't taking people to the edge of the desert and say, okay, you're free, run for it, one at a time. Not the way it's done. The people had to come together and had to learn how to come together during the plagues so that in one moment they could be taken out of Egypt. And that was all arranged by God, by what appears to be a miraculous chain of events. The truth is, the same thing happened in the days of Abraham. If you read some apocrypha about what was going on in the Chaldeans and how they were, Haran was ran into a lot of trouble for those who stayed behind. But many souls left with Abraham and went this other way. And the ways of Abraham were the ways of Moses, and the ways of Moses were the ways of Christ. But you don't know what the ways of Moses are, because you went to the Pharisees and said, what does the Old Testament mean? Which is why we go back to the Old Testament and show you what it really meant, what free will offerings were really all about, what the sacrifices really were all about, what they were really doing. It's different than what you were taught, so you don't all connect with what was going on at that particular time. Well, in our article on the whole story, so we talk about this bondage of Egypt refers to this predicament where a portion of their labor belonged to the government, and they had to work literally for free for at least 20% of the day, and through crafts of state, according to the biblical text, the burdens increased on the people. And this obligation passed from generation to generation, because that debt passed from generation to generation, which is what's happening today. What your parents have done have brought you into bondage, and now what you're doing are keeping you into bondage and raising the curse of that bondage upon your own children. And it is worse with you today than it was in those days, because you don't just owe 20%. I mean, the amount of taxes that you pay, most people pay more than 50% taxes. They may not pay 50% income tax, but that's not the only tax they pay. They pay gasoline tax and property tax and sales tax. And you start adding it all up, and it's a lot. And the government is just as corrupt and just as bankrupt and just as subject to decay and destruction. Someone came across the article, A Secret from a Form to Opt Out of the Government Handouts, and asked, why would a secret opt-out form be necessary in a voluntary system? Well, the word system is voluntary. The world system is voluntary, but not in the way that most people think. Yeah, people voluntarily went to Egypt and applied for bread. At first they bought it, but eventually the money ran out and they had to be given it. And everybody in Egypt, including all the Egyptians, went into this bondage of Egypt. Same thing took place during the Depression. Everybody, you know, there was a big depression. Everybody thought they needed help, and there was a law made that everybody had to get their Social Security number to get these benefits of the government. Now that's expanded, so if you want to get a public education, a driver's license, bank accounts, almost anything, they want to see that number or you can't play the game, because that puts you in this system, and the whole system's in bondage and in debt. So the truth is, the same system is as old as the system of Cain and the system of Nimrod and many other systems. You know, I mean, Babylon, this is what Babylon was that everybody went back into this bondage. They were slaves in this bondage. They don't always know what that slavery looks like, but if you're working without pay, if you have to work but you don't get the pay for what you've earned, somebody else gets the funds for that, the benefit of that, then you're a slave. And you can quit your job, but the next job you get, the same situation's going to apply, so you're still in bondage. Now, if I were to tell you the secret way to get out of that bondage, then would it do me any good to tell you that and you get out of the bondage? You'll just go back into it again, because you haven't changed. If we just change your status from the outside, we don't change the inside, you'll go back into bondage. We see the Egyptians and the Israelites who left doing the same thing. They all went back into bondage, or was trying to, with the golden calf, with electing a king. They're all going back into that bondage because you have to change in your heart and your mind. And what do you change to? How do you know what to change to? You're dependent upon God writing upon your heart and mind and showing you what you change to. People say, I've accepted Jesus, but they're still coveting their neighbor's goods through the agency of men who exercise authority one over the other. Those two ideas are incompatible. Maybe you accepted part of the idea of Jesus, but you have to accept the whole of Jesus to be really a part of what Jesus was teaching us. And he was teaching people how to be free, because at Pentecost, thousands and thousands came out of the system. Now, they were still in the midst of the government, but they were no longer living of the government. They didn't depend on the benefits. The riots that we saw in Israel, in Judea, where they talk about Pontius Pilate and, you know, men pulling out clubs and beating people and everything, that was because the people were claiming that Pontius Pilate was robbing their Social Security fund. He was taking money out of that fund, and they said that fund is designated only for our specific welfare. And the fact is, it wasn't, and neither is Social Security. And we explained that this morning. I mean, then you can go on the website and look, and we'll show you the actual Supreme Court ruling in 1937. There is no division of funds. There's no separate fund. It's all in the general fund and is all accessible to be spent. As a matter of fact, they can stop handing out any benefits and you're still obligated. That's been ruled over and over again. I'm not making that up. We show you the quotes. You're in bondage. You're in the bondage of Egypt. You have returned there, even though you were told never, ever to go back there. If you read it, God said in Deuteronomy 17, that you were never to go back there again. In Exodus 1:8, now there arose a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. And in Exodus 1:13, and the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor, and they made their lives bitter with hard bondage in mortar and in brick and in a manner of service in the field, all their service wherein they made them serve with rigor. So this is what was going on back then. And to some degree, it's going on now. A lot of people have to work two jobs. Their wives have to work. Their kids have to, in order to get some extra money, sometimes they have to get jobs. And that working is good. I don't have any problem with the working. But the reason why they have to work so hard is not... When people worked that hard back in the 1800s, they became wealthy and retiring at 45 and 50. And having enough money to put people through college. One kid after another, because of the fact that they became so wealthy in a very short period of time. Now, you know, we were just talking this morning, the first house my folks bought was $3,500. And they paid for it right out. I mean, even if you had a mortgage, the idea of a mortgage being more than 5 years was unheard of. And the house they bought had maple floors and oak cabinets and dishes in the cupboards. The furniture was there, everything, $3,500, in a great neighborhood in the middle of Nebraska. But the dollar went a lot farther in those days. See, that you get, that's another tax you get, inflation. Things go up in value, and you didn't do it, they don't actually go up in value, they go up in price. And the reason they go up in price is that the value of your money went down. That's a tax. So anyway, in this same process has been used throughout man's beleaguered history. Israel went into bondage because they and all of the people of Egypt sought the benefits offered by the government of Pharaoh. That's what they did. And there was no going back from that. The voluntary application, action, and agreement are both covetous practices and the result of a society slothful in the ways of Christ. I mean, if you were all doing what Christ said, there would be absolutely no reason for Social Security. You'd be taking care of one another through faith, hope, and charity. And your kids would be taking care of most of the elderly because of the fact that that's what honoring their father and their mother means. To fatten, to care for, to provide for. And that's why the Corban of the Pharisees was making the word of God to none effect. Because it was causing many people to do no more ought for their parents. Instead of going and getting a job and supporting their parents and taking care of their parents, they often end up in their parents' basement or extra room, living off of their parents until their parents die. And if there's a little bit of money left over, they scoff it up. They didn't honor their parents. They didn't honor their children. They just lived off of other people's efforts. And now if you set them free, will they become better people? Will they stay free or will they go back into bondage? Well, they'll probably partner up with people who will rob them. They will partner up with people who don't really care about them. You know, I always remember an old boss sheep herder who came to this country many, many years ago. Must be trying to think how much older than me he was, but, 70 years ago, he came to this country. He always talked with a stutter, and you could understand him. He's a great storyteller. The stuttering really helped, actually, because he could get that punchline out with the stutter. But he said, I come to this country, work very hard, get partner, go into business together, work very, very hard. But partner's smarter than me, and he was broke. He had to go back to Spain. And he went back up, saved up his money, and came back again. and tried it again. This time he didn't get a smart partner. He learned from his mistake, and he went out and he made some good money, and he got sheep, and he got land, and he worked hard. And then he got the garbage concession in town, and he did both. He ran the sheep and did the garbage concession, and his wife opened up a restaurant. It's still open to this day. And I don't know who's running it. She'd have to be in her 90s now. But anyway, he got smarter, and he worked hard. And that's the problem, though, is he was learning. And he didn't make the same mistake. So if you've gone into bondage and been in bondage because you didn't know the ways of God, you knew the ways of jealousy and judgment and envy and sloth and all these vices, but you didn't know the ways of God. You weren't applying yourself to the ways of God, and I set you free. You're just going to go back into bondage with somebody else. You may not believe the government anymore, but you'll believe somebody, and you will go back into bondage again because you haven't changed. Not the way you need to change. You think you've changed. That's another deception. You know, Israel thought they were right when they were building the golden calf and going back in there. They thought this would give them security and protection. But Christ didn't come to give you security and protection. He came to serve. If you don't come together to serve, you have no protection. People come together for what they think that will benefit them. You get everybody coming together for what they think will benefit them. Nobody will benefit. They will all bleed each other dry. You have to, you know, and I see this with couples who get married. You know, usually a couple, when two couples get married and neither one of them are givers, it don't last long. But if one of them is a giver and one of them is a taker, and of course I'm drawing black and white lines here, and it's not always that way. Sometimes people are both givers and takers, but are they more giver or more taker? Well, eventually those relationships self-destruct. The more you have the taker spirit in the relationship, the more likely it will self-destruct. Christ came to give. He didn't come to take. The apostles were willing to lay down their lives and give. They didn't come to take. And because of that, Christians not only survived but thrived during the decline and fall of the Roman Empire and became the first free people of Europe, really free people, because they were free not only from the domination of Rome, but from the superstitions and plagues of other society. And the real history of those free people is almost blotted out, but they lived all over Europe and into Asia, and they were organized in the tens, hundreds, and thousands. Nobody could defeat them. Nobody could oppress them. The ways of the adversary were chained. They couldn't make headway. And then 1,000 years ago, it was like the beast was unchained, and they made headway. And they brought the people back into bondage. A lot of violence. Millions upon millions upon millions of people were put to death. Millions upon millions of people were driven out of their homes. Their homes were robbed. How did this happen? What? Their complacency, their success allowed them to degenerate again a little bit. But also that came the test. If they had risen to the occasion, they would have survived that, but they did not. Of course, there were different people here then. This was the children of children of children. It wasn't the same people. Now, are the children being born today or born again today who will have the power to overcome the bondage of the world? We're told the whole world would go into a strong delusion. We were told the whole world would go back into the bondage of Egypt, be entangled again in the elements of that world. We were told all this was going to happen, and that has happened. It's already happened. You already have the mark of the beast. You don't believe me? You know, go read our article on the details, study of the mark of the beast at Preparing You. It's already here. It's already now. And there is no question about it. Want to argue it? Okay, let's argue. You know, show me that it's not the case. But you better read the article so that you have an idea of what I'm talking about. Anyway, I'm going to take a break now. And I'm going to try to open up the chat room. So if you have more questions, you can go into the chat room if we can't answer those questions. And then we'll go a little bit farther into the whole story. But first, the break. Well, welcome back and find out what the whole story really is. And so this article was written because some people were trying to figure out how to opt out of the system. And they had seen that one article, like it was some sort of secret way to opt out of the system. And I talk about the same process has been used throughout man's beleaguered history. In Israel and Cain's city-state, Nimrod has always used it. It's the offer of benefits, which is why Paul in the New Testament, quoting David in the Old Testament, says that what should have been for your welfare has become a snare. And Proverbs talks about not eating at the table of men who exercise authority, kings, rulers. Why Jesus said you are not to be like the princes of the Gentiles who exercise authority one over the other, but call themselves benefactors, which is why Jesus tells you not to call any man father. In other words, the father is the one you look to for benefits. Your father takes care of you, puts food on the table. If you're eating at the table of men who exercise authority, you're going to go into bondage. That's how it works. It's always worked that way. This is not new, it's not rocket science, it's the way it is. And that is what your parents have done and you have done. You did not set the table of the Lord. The table of the Lord, the table of Moses, the table of Abraham is set with free will offerings. People willing to help one another, wanting to help one another, waiting to help one another, looking for the opportunity to give and forgive. That is what the way is all about. But given a way that strengthens the poor, not the way they did it in Sodom and Gomorrah, where they made the people weak, not the way they did it in Rome when Polybius was talking about, you know, living at the expense of others, not the way to where you bite one another, where you take from one another, where you covet one another's goods so that you can have benefits at their expense, because that will turn you into a savage and a slave. And of course, that's what's happened. The voluntary application, actions, and agreements, both the covetous practices and the result of society slothful in the ways of Christ, Jesus, and the early church, has brought about the present bondage. People have again become human resources, sureties for debt. Most continue to curse their children with that debt, because of their false religion, because of their practice of public religion, because of a strong delusion that they're saved when they're actually doing contrary to what Christ. They think they're Christians, and Christ warned that many would think that they're Christians, that they're coming in my name, but they're actually workers of iniquity because they have a Corban, a system of sacrifice that is compelled to offerings that not only makes the word of God to none effect, but it causes you to do no more ought or less for your parents than what you really should be doing. And that's why you're in bondage. So how do you get out of such a system? The form mentioned in the article is not a secret. I have known about it and many others like it for years. Both the IRS 4029 and Form 4361 are applications for exemptions from Social Security and Medicare taxes, but they are only offers of exemption, which can be revoked at any time. And I have footnotes here where you can go to and you can look up and see what I'm talking about. I have known of the minister and members of religious order form, which is 4361, this from also used by Christian Science practitioners, they use that too, but not for ministers under vows of poverty. Some Amish use Form 4029 as an application for exemption from Social Security and Medicare taxes and as a waiver of benefits. It doesn't take you out of the system. It doesn't make you separate. It just gives you an exemption that is really only a temporary exemption. It's not a permanent exemption. If you read on the form, furthermore, I understand that the tax exemption for myself or for my employer under the section 1402G1 and 3127 of the Internal Revenue Code is no longer effective, this waiver will also no longer be effective. In other words, they could take it away. You haven't opted out of any system. You're just not going to get any benefits. You know, and the talk of this vow of poverty, people don't understand that. Christ was very clear on the status of his ministers, and it was the same status as those of the Levites. The vow of poverty is a requirement of Jesus Christ, and he doesn't call, and we talk about this in other places, and there's a live link there where I mentioned the vow of poverty. We can go and find out what they mean by vow, which is actually the word eusebius, which is has to do with eusebius, which has to do with prayer. And poverty really has to do with you don't have a personal estate. You own all things in common with other ministers who are in your religious order. And that's almost like a communist system, but in a religious order of people who have the character of Christ, there's nothing wrong with a socialist system amongst saints, but amongst the general population, God never desired that. He wants you to be free souls under God. But the ministers belong to God. And the Levites belong to God. That's why the apostles all called themselves bond servants. They didn't. That's why Hoses, who was a Levite, sold the property that he owned and laid the money at the foot of the apostles. Because it's part of Christ's system. If you don't understand how it works, you need to read the Free Church Report. You need to come to our studies. We have studies every Tuesday night on the Free Church Report. And we're saving the recordings from them, and we're putting there so that people can go through them. I think there's over 40 hours of recordings just on the Free Church Report, taking it through section by section. And if you come there, you can ask questions, and we will answer your questions. We will steer you, and we encourage you to question what we're saying, so that when you come there and you ask the questions, we'll put the answers on the recording, we'll put the answers on the page, so the next person that comes along and asks those questions, they will know where those answers are. Because we have done our homework. So if you look at the general instructions in the Form 4361, few ministers can opt out of Social Security by meeting the strict IRS guidelines required for filing IRS Form 4361, application for exemption from self-employment tax for use by ministers, members of religious orders, and Christian Science practitioners, as I mentioned before. That's who this is for. Purpose of form, it says, file Form 4361 to apply an exemption from self-employment tax if you have ministerial earnings. Defined later, it says R. So here's the form says, 4361. An ordained, commissioned, or licensed minister of a church. A member of a religious order who has not taken a vow of poverty. Because this doesn't apply to any minister who's taken a vow of poverty. A Christian Science practitioner. Now, there's a lot of other strict rules, and we're not going to go into all of them. But the reality is what a person who is a member of that church, he's saying that church will take care of me. That church will provide for me, so I don't need Social Security. So now if you came to us and you wanted us to sign that 4361, that means we're going to have to take care of you. We'll be obliged to take care of you. We can be held liable for taking care of you. We're filling out one of their forms, and they can come back and allow you to sue us to take care of you. And it doesn't matter if you give us a waiver, that is not going to protect us. Now, if you were really one of our ministers and really dedicated, why aren't you doing what Christ said, which is take the vow of poverty? See, we have lots of ministers who haven't taken a vow of poverty, but they're voluntary ministers. They're not paid a salary by us. They may receive some money from the people directly for them, that they can put in their pocket and use, but they will be liable for the tax. But we're not going to be liable in the sense of an entitlement for their care. Now, we do care for people, and we're working on making arrangements to care for more. But we can only do it with the help of the people. But you can go look at how frugal we are, how thrifty we are, how dedicated we are, and decide whether you want to support this ministry or not. You don't have to. Because, see, we only depend upon free will offerings and the sweat of our own brow. Most of us are self-supporting. We don't depend upon the people to support us, like Paul and his tent making. So, if you are a duly ordained, commissioned, or licensed minister of a church or a member of a religious order not under the vow of poverty, prior to the filing this form, you must inform the ordaining, commissioning, or licensing body of your church or order that on a religious conscientious group or religious or conscientious grounds, you are opposed to the acceptance of public insurance benefits based on ministerial service. And I know Baptist ministers who've done this. There's other ministers who've done this. And that's fine if they want to do it. We're doing what Christ said. We're not doing what the world, you know, the reason we organize in the way that we do is not as some sort of tax ploy. But there's more. It says, do not file this form 4361 if you ever filed a 2031, revocation of exemption from self-employment tax for use by ministers, members of religious orders, and Christian Scientists practitioners. Or, this is the other reason, you belong to a religious order and took a vow of poverty. You are automatically exempt from self-employment tax on earnings for services you perform for your church or its agencies. No tax exemption applies to earnings for services you perform for any other organization. So that's very important. So if you were to make money doing something that is not a part of the church ministry, then that is taxable. So you haven't opted out of anything. You're still in the world. You're still of the world. You're still dependent upon the world. You're not separate from the world. But you can do that if you want, but that's not what we're into. We're into conforming to Christ. It goes on to say, non-exempt earnings. Exemptions from self-employment tax does not apply to earnings from services that are not ministerial. Now, you can delude yourself into what you think is ministerial, but it may not be ministerial in the eyes of the IRS. So you have to understand what you're doing. Now, what we're doing, what Christ did, what Moses did, was actually setting the people free. It was, but in order to set them free, they needed to change their understanding of things. They needed to think a different way. They needed to pursue righteousness. Not just think they're pursuing righteousness. They had to actually pursue righteousness. You know, and I point out that the Amish already take care of one another as a people. And, of course, that's what they were learning in Egypt during the plagues, is how to take care of one another, because they weren't getting any more benefits, no more straw from the government. They had to glean in the field at night for their benefits in hard times. And there was great lessons learned in that. You don't just file papers and then get out of the system or get out of bondage. You have to actually walk the walk and do the work. So isolated individuals cannot set them free with paperwork. Until those who claim to be Christians sit down in the companies of tens, in ranks of 50, in ranks of 100, as commanded by Christ, and we'll show you where that is Mark 6, 39, 40, which was the same directive as Moses, and those who worship through the altars of faith established by Abraham, why should they expect to be set free. If you're not going to sit down and take care of one another, why should you expect to be free? Because you're not going to be free. That's just the way it is. So, in this whole story, the people who think, you know, I've seen people selling packets for $10,000, for $4,000, for $1,000, for $600, for $500 that are going to set you free. Nonsense. That's not what Christ was all about. I remember years ago, the guy was doing this. He says, I'm setting one person free at a time from Egypt. No, he wasn't. What he actually did was get a lot of people in a lot of trouble. Now, so we've had a lot of talks recently about the unrighteous mammon and the righteous and being friends of the unrighteous mammon. You need to clean out you're the temple of the Holy Spirit. You need to clean that out. You need to think a different way. You need to act a different way. You need to walk a different way. This salvation through repentance and the baptism of the early church was not an exemption, and they did not have to file an application with the Pharisees. If they would be willing to organize themselves in the tens according to the dictates of Christ, which were the same instructions given to the Levites of the church in the wilderness, they could be free indeed. But they're not ready for that. They're going to have to learn what that means. The church appointed by Christ was to be the benefactors of a peculiar people that through faith, not force, through charity, not chains of contracts, took care of one another in righteousness. The ministers of his church were to actually be ministers within a religious order, who came out at Pentecost to set the people free from the schemes of Herod, from the free bread of Rome, from the social welfare of a system where that had snared them. And they could do that because Christ arranged that. But you're not ready for that because you're not sitting down and taking care of one another. You know, and so I don't know why people think that they are suitable to be set free. If the Son, therefore, shall make you free, ye shall be free indeed. Well, actually, you should be free in the right to do what you need to do. And all kinds of things will need to be done. All kinds of things will need to be looked at. But you have to do it. You have to do it together. There is a mandatory exception for the church bought by the blood of Christ. Those who will conform to Christ and actually do what he told his disciples to do, they do not have to file an application to be his church. They just have to be his church. They don't need permission to do it. But they will need the grace of God to do it. So you have to apply yourself accordingly. The reason the Amish are granted a limited exemption is because they are not slothful like modern Christians. They actually take care of one another. They have not yet finished the journey all the way back to the Father's house. But they are closer than many of the other religious groups I see in many ways. And they may be farther away in other ways. And I don't want to judge the individual. But I just want you to understand that all the modern Christians have become merchandise. They curse their children. They have all gone the way of the Nicolaitan and committed the error of Balaam. And so now you have the opportunity of changing what you're doing and how you're doing it. And then God will bring grace accordingly. Woe unto them, for they have gone in the way of Cain and ran greedily after the error of Balaam for reward. And those are the rewards of unrighteousness, and perished in the gainsaying of Cain. Woe unto them. The state of the merchants of the earth The state or merchants of the earth that would, so what am I talking about if you go into Revelations? I mean, you know that a portion of your labor already belongs to somebody else, and you have to work without pay in order to provide that service to them. In Revelation 18:3, we see, "For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies," dainties, whatever you want to call them. That's Revelation 18:13. "And cinnamon and odorous and ointments and frankincense and wine and oil and fine flour and wheat and beasts and sheep and horses and chariots and slaves and souls of men." So that's where you're at. And that's where you have gone. And if you want to go back, you have to think a different way. You have to come together like Christ to serve one another. And it's a process. There's no like fill in this form here, check this box, check that box, and then suddenly you're free. It just does not work that way. You have to go the other way. You have to operate another way entirely. And so that's pretty much the gist of the story as far as filling out some papers and getting out of the system. People really need some deep soul searching and find out what is really the cause of their problems. And we talked about it for 2 hours this morning, because you'll be drawn back into the same problem again with just different players, different people. And you want to get away from that. And the only way you can get away from that is to think a different way, to walk a different way, to be a different way. And that way has to be really different, not just a little different. So anyway, we'll take another break. So welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. I was just looking here at a question that came up during the minister's call, and I happened to not be on it because I had to go to a gathering locally here, and there was quite a turnout at the gathering here, which is amazing because we live out in the middle of nowhere. But he talks about what was the Christian church and congregations doing during the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, and the one individual ventured forth an answer with his what he calls his current and rather undetailed understanding of the situation. I probably didn't provide a good synopsis in my short answer at that time, so I thought it would be helpful for me to review what I think I understand about the question. Maybe that provokes more discussion and others can fill in the blanks. And so he says, jumping off from the book of Acts, because that's the beginning of the church age, which is a kind of a modern term that we use, the church age, because the church in the wilderness was the church age too. I mean, it's the same God, it's the same plan. It's just that we don't understand the old plan. We think people were killing sheep and setting them on fire and making God happy. That's not what the Bible says. But anyway, another story. Things started out perhaps with some trepidation, but increasingly replaced by the growing realization of purpose. And he quotes Acts 1, "God miraculously testifies to the kingdom's purpose at Pentecost. Christians struggle with community care and support, and the church apostles, elders, and disciples cultivated a connection guidance ministry." That's somewhat true, but then when you just say that by itself, you have to look at what did that look like. The church prepares for and accomplishes a faith emergency mission action, what we call ministry auxiliary, which is this FEMA. It's our FEMA, and it's people taking care of people. And he says the church seeks and finds kingdom consensus on issues of tradition and dogma. The church continues turning the world upside down for some interminable time through the end of the book of Acts and succeeding epistles in other history not contained in the standard Bible. So we see that there are other acts that are going on where they are, you know, there's a dearth in the land and they send aid. There's famine, they send aid. The aid is moving back and forth with people like Barnabas and Paul. And so that when one area gets hit hard, the other area helps out. And then that area gets hit hard and those other people who are now recovering help out. And sometimes 14,000 families were ordered out of Rome by Claudius. Where did they go? They didn't have any place to live. And so Paul's making tents. But they did have a place to live because they had this network. Because from the beginning, Christ was telling people to sit down in the tens, fifties, and hundreds. From the beginning, when he appointed his Sanhedrin, Christ had his own Sanhedrin, his own 70, and he sent them out, not just to the people in Judea, but the lost sheep. So they were building the network all over the Roman Empire right away, right out of the box. And they were connecting to these people, and they're saying, the kingdom of heaven is here. We just have to go back to the old ways and the ways of righteousness taught by Moses, taught by Abraham, taught by the apostle, by the prophets, and eventually would be taught by the apostles. And that's what they started doing. He says, what follows the history of the New Testament is pretty interesting when you can find records of Christian history in the faith movement of various sorts through the ages, some of which starting out well and tragically go awry on occasions. Well, you'd have to see, you know, because clearly they talk about some guys trying to do things and they did not stick to the actual plan. They varied from it. Why? Because they wanted to be free, but they did not want to be as righteous as you need to be free. And this is why Christ warns that there would be many people who want to be free. There would be many people who say they are Christians, but they are not, because they do not put on the full armor of God. And so what they do is they pick bad leaders, or they pick, it's not even the leaders, companions. They trust too much in people who are liars and people who are not dependable. This is why you have these, clarify these limitations in Titus. You know, that this is, your ministers need to be these men of good reputation and have proven themselves with their families and with others and how they worked. You know, the Roman Catholic Church came out of the Constantine's Church. It didn't come out of Christ very clearly in the history. And I don't want to pick on the Roman Catholics because they're not any more deluded than many of your Baptists, Lutherans, or Methodists, because the whole world is under a strong delusion. And we have an article on that. You can go read that article. So we have, you know, we go through a lot of these. We've done Peter now. We have a good study on Peter. We have a good study on Romans. And we've been doing a lot of them. And we have recordings now that have been put up on these deals so that you can go back and look at it. And we show you the original Greek. We show you the history of that time and that era. And all you have to do is go there and look it over. And if you think we're wrong, join the network and show us where we're wrong. But come with actual evidence that we're wrong. And maybe we are wrong about some things, but we've done a lot of homework. So it's up to you to really find out what we're all about and how this all works. Because so many of you have become deluded by false religion. And even if we tell you the truth, you can still twist what we tell you into falsehoods. And so you don't really understand what goes on, because that there's always, you know, in the Hebrew language, there's always this double meaning. Then there was these layers to your understanding. And of course, that's why Christ talked in parables. And so that those who had real understanding, which comes to you through the Spirit, where God writes upon your hearts and minds, and they're going to have a greater understanding reading the exact same information that somebody else reads, because they're going to understand the principles behind it. So I wrote an article on social virtues, and I said social virtues have been listed with terms like being loved, charisma, unpretentious. But likely these are merely productions or the fruit of virtues rather than the virtues themselves. Other lists like honesty, friendship, forgiveness, concern for others, patience, kindness, which includes virtues like generosity, courtesy, politeness, and cleanliness. But virtue by definition is the moral excellence of a person. And a morally excellent person has a character made up of virtues valued as good. You know, that their character manifests those values, and we call those values good. That would mean that they are honest, respectful, courageous, forgiving, kind, just, or just for an example. And I have footnotes on the page if you look up social virtue or even virtues. Virtue includes the desire to do what is morally right. I mean, you're not just doing what's morally right because it's morally right. You actually want to do what is more. You are compelled. You are OCD about doing what is right. Well, then what is right? What is the value of this, that, or the other thing that makes... I mean, isn't that what is good and evil? Isn't that the question? So how are you going to determine what is good and evil? Are you going to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? You're going to study a lot about virtue, about what is right, and then you'll know, and then you'll be virtuous? No, it doesn't work that way. To have the virtue of God, the virtue of His righteousness. You only know because He's writing on your heart and your mind, and He does that with the Holy Spirit. But now, studying isn't a bad thing. I mean, you read Luke 19:1-10, Zacchaeus began his desire, and in the end, he gave to the poor. Feigned friendliness or patience is not virtue. Virtue stems from sincere humility with God. Virtue attends real repentance. Zacchaeus was chief amongst the publicans and rich, but changes happened in him after he met Jesus. And so you can go read, you know, Luke 19:1-10. And see what that was really all about. But the point is that this virtue is something that comes from within you. You can't just put it on. Otherwise, you're just going to be a whited sepulcher. It's not a show, but it should be producing certain kinds of fruit in your life. You know, it will make you more courageous, more forgiving, more kind, not quick to anger, patient. Social virtues may be closely related to moral virtues, and they may not even be distinguishable from them. They are generally viewed as the virtues or traits of character that promote social harmony. A virtue is the character muscle of the individual. Social virtues can be described as the sinew of society. Now, you know, societies that are not forgiving, they don't forgive their neighbor, they hate their neighbor, they want to kill their neighbor, they want to riot and throw, you know, burning tires at their neighbor, and shoot at their neighbor, and shoot rockets at their neighbor. Their society is going to be full of injustice because hate and... I mean, they're also going to have a certain amount of care for one another, but like Jesus says, even thieves and robbers love one another. But they're going to sow destruction. They're not going to be successful. You could put one group on one desert island and one group on the other desert island, and the ones that hate other people, they will do badly because they don't have virtue in them. People who are slothful and not diligent and work. This is why people should be working every day. You know, I mean, at least 6 days out of the week. I mean, you don't have to work at a job 6 days out of the week, but when you get the days off, say you could get, you know, there's a mill down here and you can get your 40 hours in the first 4 days of the week. So what do you do? Sleep and drink in the other 3 days of the week? Or do you go home and, you know, fix up your backyard and build a deck and clean away the weeds and the mud and everything and take care of your family and all those things? Because you're not slothful. The slothful, they couldn't even, you know, if you gave them a task that required that they get up every 2 hours, you know, which we do during lambing every year, we get up every 2 hours. And then we go out and work all day. Even though we've been up every 2 hours, sometimes, you know, I used to go out sometimes to the lambing barn. And I remember once I went out there once about 9 o'clock in the morning. I'd already been out, but I came back in at 8 and then I went back out again. And I didn't get back in until the next morning. I never came back in. I was out with lambs all the time. I did lay down once on a hay bale in the barn and fell asleep with my legs dangling over. But then you get up and you work all day. And you catch some naps here and there and you get caught up. And you're homeschooling your kids. And you're carrying in your firewood. And you're doing everything else that you have to do out in the country for yourself and for your family. And then, you know, I mean, I actually came home from work. I had a job where I was built cabinets and was installing them. I had to have them by a certain date before the schools started up. My kids were all home taught, but I put in these cabinets, and the job had to be done by the first day of school. Well, by the first day of school, I got in the last cabinet at 7 o'clock in the morning. The people were showing up. I got home about 8 o'clock, and then I got a call that I had to go because somebody's plumbing broke. And so I drove all the way back and beyond. You know, it was another 80, 90-mile round trip, and fixed this old lady's plumbing, and then came back home. And pretty well was ready to pass out. I think I lay down on the couch and didn't wake up for hours. But that's the kind of effort that you put out, because you're diligent, because God is diligent. You're not slothful. If you have time, you use it wisely. Those are virtues. I mean, if you know, Hobbes defines gratitude as acting in such a way as the person to whom you are grateful would have no reasonable cause to repent him or hers goodwill toward you. And that's what society, that's what makes society, is that goodwill. You would not sit around and do nothing. You would be constantly, you'd be getting up early in the morning and trying to figure out, what can I do for other people? Not, what can I fix for my breakfast? I didn't have breakfast this morning. I was too busy. Barely had lunch. Because I got back here just moments before the program, and I'd done 2 hours this morning. Then I conferred with other people, and then I went out and on the desert and took care of animals out there and irrigation out there, and we got other things together, and we're putting together a fire wagon for fire season, which is coming up, and there's a training session tomorrow. So we're always pushing these deadlines, and so we're never wasting time or seldom doing anything that we could be considered wasting time. Other people are absolutely comfortable. I can guarantee you the Israelites did not waste time. I can guarantee you that early Christians did not waste time. They understood no pain, no gain. But it wasn't a pain to do the work. It was a joy to do the work. Work was not a four-letter word. Lazy, that's a four-letter word. I think that's four letters, yeah. And so they would constantly be looking to take care of one another, and they would be taking care of themselves. They would, I mean, their temple is a holy place. They would be taking care of themselves. And there are lots of, and the thing is, we help people all the time. We help children. We had a house full today of kids from miles away come here to play. There are some kids that grew up in this community. They spent more time at our house than they did at their own. Why? I mean, we're very in some ways we're very strict, you know, but yet there's a freedom here because we're strict about the important things, and we're blessings of freedom about other things. Some people like to come out here, and we would like to arrange that a lot of people come out here. But we want to see you building that network, caring about one another. And because this is a great place to pray and meditate. But I tell you that if you come out here, you will come face to face with yourself. And I have seen a lot of people that they come back and they come back. And I've had people, and I've talked to people before about this, where the people come out and then they go back to their own homes or to their own country, because we have people from a lot of different countries. And they say that what they hear here, they know it's important, but when they get back home, they can't remember it. And there's a reason why. Because they tap into something here, and it actually makes them feel good. Although there are people that come here, and they actually are frightened. They won't get out of their car. Because there's something that is in conflict with them. So what is that? Are we bad? Or are they bad? And they... You know, who be bad here? If you listen to the 2 hours before this show, the fact is that people are driven by currents in the quantum of the universe, that, you know, their sails are up, and envy and strife and judgment and all those vices and greed and lust, gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, envy, pride. And the counterparts, they say, are chastity, temperance, charity, diligence, patience, gratitude, and humility. And they use these seven. But the reality is if you go and read Aristotle's list of virtues, you have faith and friendship and honor, temperance, liberality, fortitude, justice, truthfulness, good temper. You know, he actually has friendship and friendliness both in his list of 12. And magnificence. And he actually has pride listed as a virtue, but he means self-satisfaction, you know, where, you know, you have, you know, it's back to that honor. You take pride in what you do. But you're not arrogantly pride. And, you know, evil constantly is taking things and twisting the words for their own purposes. But anyway, so on our virtue page, we have a list of a lot of these things. But you need that virtue. Their social virtues is what makes society work. And you have to work together with others. And if you don't have that virtue in you, you will be drawn to others who lack your same virtues. This is what we talked about this morning. If you're slothful, you will draw other slothful people to you. If you have a bad temper, you will draw other people with a bad temper to you. If you are dishonest with yourself and with others, you will draw other dishonest people to you. And so you have to be on guard, and you need to communicate regularly with those people who value the truth more than anything else. But anyway, until then, peace upon your house. May God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church, at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.